Welcome to Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio and a very, very special programme this morning here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, because I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Richard H. Tucker, MBE. And to say that you're a super trooper is an understatement, really. Has the Royal Air Force always been in your life, Richard?
No, I fell into it by accident. I was in that generation that grew up in school where we had the three-day working week, homework by candlelight, and of us, I left school with no qualifications whatsoever, but I had an amazing lady that 45 years next year, we've been married, 49 going out, that said I need to do something with my life, and I best sort it out, and I stumbled into the RAF office, and the rest is history, as they say.
And what a resume. I don't know where to start. Chairman of Trustees, you're having served in the RAF NCO, that's from 1976, and that's across theatres, that's from Northern Ireland, Sardinia, Cyprus, which is where I'm going next week, Gibraltar, and also Germany, including specialist tours, including, of course, the forward operating team, and that's for the first Gulf War. You must have really wanted to be in the Royal Air Force all your life then.
Well, like I say, I fell into it in a way, but once I was in and I was through the doors and through training, yeah, it just became a vocation, and it does encapsulate you into all the opportunities that there were then. So you had adventure training, you had tours, and being a driver, you were able to go everywhere, because every unit, no matter how big, small, the row from airfields to operational centres, and that you were able to go there and drive somebody or move some stores around or whatever, of course collect the rations.
Now, forward operating team, what does that mean? Obviously you're there first, is it?
Yes. So the first Gulf War, we went out on the 14th of September, and we spent 3 months setting everything up, preparing ourselves so that we were in a position to support the air commander of the operation.
So you were virtually clearing the ground and making sure it was all safe?
Absolutely, and the store was sufficient stuff in place that we could manage the war effectively and whatever was required of us.
Now obviously all wars are serious, but the Gulf War must have been very, very difficult for everybody in the Royal Air Force at that time.
Well, it was obviously being away from family and especially children. My youngsters were growing up in primary school. They found it quite hard. For us, it was what we trained for. It was an opportunity to go ahead and actually do what we'd always liked to do. So it was probably harder on the ones we left behind, because the time was unknown.
Now, in 1996, under Options for Change, you left with an MBA gained, and that's through the RAF Distant Learning Scheme.
Yes, so the Air Force in the early 80s started a distance learning opportunity for those that were taking our trade qualifications, which were RAF, obviously. But you could, and with the support the scheme gave, transfer or go through the modules and transfer your qualifications into civilian qualifications. That I did, and it eventually ended up leading to an MBA.
And of course that's come in very handy for you, because having left the RAF, you enjoyed several senior roles in distribution before establishing in 2015 AAA Caring Caretaker Limited.
Yes, so I left the Air Force, went to work for Safeway, initially in Stockton, as a manager. And my last role was with Excel Logistics, working for Safeway in Coventry, running a distribution centre of 2,000 people. And then I went to work for Richard Branson for a short period of time, running an operation at Eagles Cliff. And as you say, in 2015, having had three redundancies in life, I decided to set my own company up.
And it employs 51 personnel, from which 24 are ex-veterans, along with 5 service dependents.
So we're very proud of our record, and we're gold holders of the Armed Forces Covenant, which we're going to talk about later on. And our ethos is very much around the employing veterans where we can, particularly those with seen and unseen disabilities, and looking after also some of their dependents and spouses, which are very important, because the spouses, in a lot of cases, give up their careers to support their husbands. And they find it very hard to get work, because like the husbands, they're only in post perhaps for 2 or 3 years. So employers tend to look at their CV and go, oh, you've had a lot of moves. But they've been supporting their husband. So it's incredibly important on the covenant side as well that we recognise sometimes where spouses give up their work. And there's quite a few well-known examples.
Now, music also in the Royal Air Force plays a very important part, and you've chosen this particular tune because it means so much to you as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's military music, when you're on a parade square or out in operation, military music is military music. It does sort of get the old heckles on the back of the neck going. Each regiment is incredibly proud of their own particular music. This particular piece I find is quite stirring. It's stimulating, and it brings together a lot of what we try to achieve in the Air Force, which is training people to reach and achieve their best.
Thank you.
Elgar's Nimrod. Special programme this morning here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio. My special guest is Richard H. Tucker, MBE. Now, AAA Caring Caretaker. You're very proud of the staff, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes. I mean, the staff can help make or break any company, I mean. And I've employing veterans as well. There's a couple of our guys who've had some difficulties in rehabilitating back into civilian life, but one gentleman in particular, he was very diligent about how he managed and looked after his area of cleanliness, even telling a director from the company that owned the site that he accidentally dropped a piece of litter and he went up to him, told him to pick it up and put it in the bin. That director turned round and rang us and explained the story and said, if I can have him, you can have another contract on another site. And that's if we treat people well and we look after people and we recognise that not everybody can do all of the skills, but some can do the skills exceptionally well, and give them an opportunity and give them a chance, then they'll repay you 50-fold back in terms. And that's again one of the reasons why we got the Gold Award for the Armed Forces Covenant.
I mean, that's one thing that I've always had a belief in, that if you look after your staff, they'll look after you.
Totally.
And always believed it, really have. And there's just proof that it does work. Now, also, you're a member of the Worshipful Company of Paviours.
Yes. So having achieved the freedom of the city in London back in 2014, That entitled me, if I so wished, to join the Worshipful Company of Paviours, which I did, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. The company is one of the oldest companies. It's in the first 25 livery companies that this country had. We're number 18, and we used the company in the old days paved the streets of London, not with gold, but with pavements. And interesting, they could actually collect the pigs from that were stray in the city, providing they didn't have a bell on, because if they had a bell on, they belonged to the church. They could collect the pigs and they could roast them and do whatever they wished, because the city of London at that time was all run by pigs.
Now, I've often wondered what is the freedom of London? What does it entitle you to, Richard?
Well, nothing really these days. It's a very, very lovely title to have and to receive. Still on the statute books, it's never been repealed, is that if you get drunk, you within the city bounds, in theory, you cannot get arrested. I've not tried that yet. And, of course, you can take your sheep across London Bridge, which is probably the most famous. And the livery companies still do that to this day to raise money for charity. They organise a day, because obviously London Bridge being a major traffic thing, you just can't turn up and wander across the bridge with your sheep.
I just often wonder what it all meant, like the freedom of London.
It was the licence to trade in whatever your commodity was. So goldsmiths being the oldest, there was a commodity to trade, gold, and so on.
Now, you're also the chair of the North East Ministry of Defence Employees.
The Employers' Engagement, with the Armed Forces Covenant, yes. So we actively promote the Armed Forces Covenant, particularly with employers, and the trust, the hospital trust, is a GOAD, and has been very, very supportive of the Armed Forces Covenant. And we have a business forum that meets regularly and discusses how we can help influence various other government bodies and how we can help other employers join the journey from signing the covenant, which is free, right through bronze, silver, and then to gold themselves.
Now, what is a covenant?
Okay, the covenant is a document between the individual and His Majesty's government and the armed forces. And put simply, it simply says you will not disadvantage or treat differently somebody who's serving, left of their by a veteran, and or their spouses or dependents. You will recognise the service they've given and give them the same opportunities that perhaps somebody in an area, in other words, somebody's coming back perhaps from overseas, like I did. So I come up from South West, but I came back to RAF Leeming initially, and then Staxton Wold, and employers treated me as if I'd been a local.
Music again, and this is a different style for you, isn't it? It's one of your all-time favourites as well.
It is. It's one with a roof down, driving. I have a passion for cars. I'm an old petrol head, unashamedly. I have a beautiful XK8 convertible Jaguar. And when going across the North Yorkshire Moors on a lovely day with a roof down, this track is absolutely brilliant.
There's a man in the shadows with a gun in his eye and a blade shining no so bright. There's evil in the air and there's thunder in the sky and a killer's on the bloodshot streets. On down in the tunnel with a deadly horizon, no, I swear I saw a young boy down in the gutter. He was starting to foam in the heat. Oh, baby, you're the only thing in this whole world that's good and good and right. And wherever you are and wherever you go, there's always gonna be some light. But I gotta get out, I gotta break it out now before the final crack of dawn. So we gotta make the most of our one night together. When it's over, you know we'll both be so alone. before the gates of heaven, I'll come crawling on back to you.
Richard's choice. Meatloaf, Bats Out of Hell. Now, your wife Pam's played a very important part in your career and your life, hasn't she?
She has indeed. I mean, there's often the statement about finding your soulmate. And I found my soulmate incredible at the age of 16. I didn't appreciate it, obviously, at the time, as you wouldn't. But as I say, next year we've been married 45 years, which means we've been going out nearly 50 years. And she's been there behind me and been my rock. She's the one who's pushed me at times, pulled me back at times, and has looked after our two children when I've been away on duties. Her joke was, I sent him off to a couple of tours and a couple of wars, and he still came back. But she was there to, you know, in the days when I was going up through and doing my exams and what have you. She was there to help me and push me along, because maths I struggled with for an awful lot. And she was a high school girl, so maths and English were no problem for her. Spelling, again, was a problem for me. So she helped me many, many times to perhaps 2-3 o'clock in the morning finishing an essay or a paper so that I could submit it and get through my exams to get get an MBA.
But as you said, you had no education. You were bad at maths, bad at English. You yep. couldn't do very much. But look what you've achieved, Richard.
Well, I think
it's absolutely stunning.
I think in a lot of things, it's like you just go for everything you can go for. I've taken every opportunity I can take. Done everything with sometimes with over enthusiasm. Gone on, because life is a journey. And you never know how long it's going to be for, so you've got to have to maximise. The only thing you're guaranteed, and it is a guarantee, is at some point you will exit. So you need to think, well, if I'm going to exit, what have I done? What have I left? What have I created anything? Have I given back to anything? And I've usually tried to do that.
Now, while you're away, of course, with the Royal Air Force and in conflict, of course, it's a very worrying time for Pam as well, you know, not knowing what the outcome's going to be at the end.
That's right. I mean, and of course, every partner, spouse will know also that how they react is how it transmits to the children. So they have an incredibly important, job, and a challenging one in theatre, because news can come through sporadically. We, on the other side, sit and wait in my time for the old blueies to arrive, and you get 4 or 5 in one hit. Because the way the postal system worked, and that sometimes was your only communication for weeks or maybe a month, 6 weeks on end. So your partner or your spouse has a really hard job supporting you and the family and dealing with every crisis that comes up naturally at home.
And your family and Pam must be extremely proud of you.
Well, I think they are. yes, I know. I know Pam is. I mean, my daughter has actually gone on also to achieve freedom, so she's following in our footsteps.
Now, here's a song that when you were in the Royal Air Force, you probably heard quite a few times. It's going back quite a bit. It's Snoopy versus the Red Baron. Do you remember
that? It was always a bit of fun at discos and barbecues. Somebody would have a track. It would have been an old cassette tape in those days, or a modern CD disc, as it was then. It was always came up as a bit of fun, and it still brings back memories of friends, past and present.
After the turn of the century, in the clear blue skies over Germany, came a roar and a thunder men have never heard, like the screaming sound of a big war bird. Up in the sky,
A man in a plane, Baron von Richthofen was his name. 80 men tried, and 80 men died. Now they're buried together on the countryside. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 or more, the bloody red Baron was rolling up the score. 80 men died trying to end that spree of the bloody red Baron of Germany. In the nick of time, a hero arose, a funny looking dog with a big black nose. He flew into the sky to seek revenge, but the Baron shot him down.
Curse his wild again.
10, 20, 30, 40, 50 or more, the bloody red Baron was rolling up the score. 80 men died trying to end that spree of the bloody red Baron of Germany. Now Snoopy had sworn that he'd get that man, so he asked the great pumpkin for a new battle plan. He challenged the German to a real dog fight. While the Baron was laughing, he got him in his sight. In a fix, he tried everything, but he'd run out of tricks. Snoopy fired once, and he fired twice, and that bloody red Baron went spinning out of sight. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 or more, the bloody red Baron was rolling up the score. 80 men died trying to end that spree of the bloody red Baron of Germany.
Snoopy versus the Red Baron, and I tell you what, Richard remembers that, don't you, Richard?
I do indeed. Many a barbecue.
Sky keeps grabbing some more of the air left.
And a man that certainly had a circle of life is Richard Tucker, MBE. He's been with us, and you got an MBE. You went to the castle.
Yeah, up to Palace, yeah, Buckingham Palace. It was it started an incredible journey on the 19th of November. My wife received a letter, and we received a letter, and it's always a joke in the family because of being away in operations. Pam always opened the mail. And she opened it and was stood there almost trembling at the door when I came in for lunch and said, you need to read this. And of course, then you've got an embargo for 6 weeks where you can't tell anybody. And we went down and we stayed overnight. And we came out of a Union Jack Club, London, Waterloo. And we flagged down a taxi and said, can we go to Buckingham Palace, please? Here's the car pass. And he said, I've been doing this job 35 years and I've never been asked to go to the palace. And he took us straight in, and we said to him, you can keep the car pass, it's no good to us. and my wife, my daughter Alison, and my son James, we all got out and were duly escorted up the red carpet, past the Coast Stream guards and the household cavalry, into the reception area for that morning.
And who actually gave you the MBE?
Charles, and now he's Majesty the King.
You must be very proud of that medal. But how is it easy to... It can't be easy to keep it a secret, surely.
No, it was incredibly, incredibly difficult. Obviously, my family knew, and one or two people in organisations that I worked for knew that there would be a media outlet on of the day. My wife, we'd actually planned to go down to London for a long weekend to see in the new year. We'd never been down to see the fireworks live, and we actually when it was formally announced, we got off the train, I had to do a radio interview outside King's Cross on the square and that to actually chat through that at the time. But no, it really was an amazing thing that somebody had actually nominated you somewhere on the line in life for the award.
Did Prince Charles say anything to you when you went up to receive your award?
Yes, we actually had one of the longest chats, actually. He was really interested in knowing, he had a prese, obviously, in knowing that how we were doing with the retraining of veterans. We started pioneering this right back at the beginning when I opened my company, in that, you know, nobody, as we've said before, nobody should be left. Everybody has something of offer, of value to give on that. And he was really interested, and had obviously had some detailed research done in knowing how we were training and offering rehabilitation to get people back into work.
Your next choice of music is very important as well, isn't it?
Yep, it really is. I mean, for we always say in the services, it doesn't matter what cap badge you have, and cap badges are really heartfelt, and the banter that will go between cap badges, some people think you're really being nasty to each other. Actually, it's pure service banter, but at the end of the day, you never leave a man down, and so this piece is very poignant.
Like the sun I might have known, if God had granted me a son. The summers die one by one, how soon they fly on and on, and I am old and will be gone. Bring him
Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, The Breakfast Show. Bring him home. Now, you're also a chairman of the Heroes as well. Building Heroes. Heroes. Building Absolutely Heroes. Fantastic. I mean, that means a lot to you as well, Richard, doesn't it?
It does. I was invited in 2019 to be a trustee of the board of Building Heroes, which enables those leaving the services and our veterans to take up a role and training in construction, for which the charity will cover the costs and that. And we enable people to learn everything from plant diggers and construction stuff on that, right through to building bricks, houses, civils, street works. And we have 14 academies across the country. And in October of last year, I was invited to consider and accept the role of chairman, which I took over in January. In our 10th year, last year we were awarded from His Royal Highness Duke of Gloucester the Queen's Award for enterprise in providing social mobility category. And that was an incredible achievement on Brendan Williams, who was the founder of Building Heroes, and the previous chairman, Pete Bradbury, who got us to that stage. And I now have got to follow in some big footsteps and some big shoes to help take the charity forward for the next 10 years or so, or however long they put up with me for.
Now, I know it's only September, but of course Remembrance Sunday and Remembrance Day not far off now.
No.
And it must be a very busy time for Building Heroes and anybody that worked in the Royal Air Force and our services.
It is, and across a number of things. So I also chair the Armed Forces Network for the Provincial Grand Lodge of Durham. So we've got our guys out doing reflaying and being part of Remembrance Parades. Building Heroes will be also doing their own part down in the various colleges around the country. And they also will be having a poppy day working with the Royal British Legion at all the London tube stations in the lead up to that as a part fundraising, part joint operation with British Legion.
Will you be part of the celebrations at the Cenotaph?
No, I won't be. I should be up here in the northeast. I will lead my small team to Cockerton War Memorial, mm-hmm. Whereby we will lay our wreath. The big parade, of course, is in Darlington in the War Memorial there. But the Freemasons of Durham, we paid for a cenotaph to be placed at Cockerton several years ago, and we now also take a small contingent there to join up with the other members of the armed forces that are in that particular one at 11 o'clock and remember our fallen comrades there.
And your next piece of music means a lot to you as well, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, music is such a way of invoking memories of passions and what have you. And again, this goes back to dreaming, you know, and aspiring. And I think this lady, Susan Boyle, who sang this song, it encapsulates what you can actually do. That nothing is ever too late in life. You know, you can actually go on and amaze the world with, you know, what you've got inside you and what you have, and never give up. So I dreamed a dream, for me, is another way of what we can all do and what we can help others do if we help work together and help support them. You know, everybody has got something to contribute.
I Dreamed a Dream, Susan Boyle, one of Richard's all-time favourite songs. Now, you've been appointed chair of many organisations, haven't you?
Yes, it's a bit of a family joke in that I'm trying to get a dining room set together. where I was appointed as a public appointed office last year was to the Veterans Advisory and Pensions Committee for the northeast of England, which we got sacked from, obviously, when the government stood down and then reappointed with a new government coming on board. So a sacking and a reappointment all in space of 9 months.
Now, there is conflict, of course, around the world at the moment, with Ukraine, with Russia, and also in Israel at the moment. And you must be concerned about the continuing unsettlement around the world.
We
even when you were in there 45 years ago, and you think, you know, it's still going on, we've still got conflict, and we still need armed forces, we still need our regiments, and you know, how's it going to plan out, do you think, in the future?
I don't think we've ever had such a dangerous time as we have now since perhaps back in the early 1939s and 40s, when obviously you know, we had the Second World War, and the build up prior to that is, if we look historically, it's quite similar. We don't seem to accept that peace costs money. It costs the need to have strong forces. It you cannot, sadly, maintain peace without having a good deterrent and a good defence. And that has proven to be exactly right with Putin, in particular, in invading Ukraine, a country that wanted to go its own way, have its own destiny, and has been savaged completely unnecessarily by a dictator.
Now, the Royal Air Force has always been your life, and you've never stopped actually thinking about it, about what's happening in the world. How do you think the future is going to hold for the whole of us here on Earth? Do you think there's always going to be conflict, Richard?
I think there will always be conflict as long as always we have dictators and those who insist on imposing without due respect to any rule of honesty, of transparency, of just simply wish to inflict upon others. For me, I mean, at the Air Force, I own virtually everything. I mean, it sorted me out, shaped me up, shipped me out to various postings. It educated me, and it taught me an awful lot. But one of the things it did teach us, or we saw in things from the first Gulf, the Cold War scenario, when you did the border patrols, that we do have to stand strong and tall. And where we've cut in the past, defence, and cut our forces back, that was the wrong thing to do. Today, we have an opportunity to rebuild that and to offer some of our younger adults the opportunity to join and to have and I think it's incredibly important that we continue to push where we can and to emphasise the opportunities the services have for those to join, because we do need them. If only to be the deterrent from the bully.
And comradeship is very important as well within the armed forces, isn't it? And you've now really become one of the sort of leaders, if you like, and one of those people that keep the armed forces at the forefront of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, comradeship is, as you say, is totally where it is. I mean, I've mentioned cap badges before, and in my family I have cap badges of the Royal Corps of Transport. For two brother-in-laws, I have a brother-in-law that was Coldstream Guards, a brother-in-law who was in the Navy, and of course myself in the Air Force. But the essential thing above all of that is, it doesn't matter what cap badge you are, how much Michael you take out of the others, you always are there to support, work, and make sure that you know that the person is never left behind. And it's something that we should be incredibly proud of in this country. Our armed forces and those that we have as will become lifelong friends, comrades, and you know, we have associations with which we enjoy afterwards. And yeah, it's we are the best, without a doubt, in the world. Not only in parading, not only in ceremonial, but just in the way that we as individuals look after ourselves and support each other.
Coming out to me.
Richard Tucker, MBE, my special guest this morning. Now, he's also chair of the Gold Association.
Yes, that's for the armed force. That's for the employers who have in our northeast region, which covers from pretty much down from Catterick right up to Berwick. And those members of the employers who've signed the covenant and worked up to Gold, we have an association for them. And within that, they get invited to various events, from the gun salute in York in November, which recognising the monarch's birthday, to Trooping of the Colour, which I had the honour of attending again this year, and even to the Edinburgh Tattoo, which we just recently attended. So we have this body which, again, encourages those who have done the Armed Forces Covenant to work up through bronze, silver and to gold and be recognised for their very important contribution that they make through their respective businesses, organisations, to fulfil and go above and beyond what is the basics of the covenant, which we discussed earlier. And of course, Darlington Trust is there as one of the highlights or one of the major contributors in the northeast of England.
Now, the County Durham and Darlington Foundation Trust have signed this covenant along with you all but last year. And what does it mean to you as an organisation, and what does it mean for the Trust?
Well, as an organisation such as the Gold Association, which is part of the Armed Forces Covenant, it's a major player, isn't it? I mean, it's like all aspects in life. If you have the general in the room or an organisation such as the Trust, it's incredibly important, because if they're prepared to sign up and to commit to it, it does then mean that others look at it and go, well, if they can do it, so can I, and I'm participating. And again, just signing the basics of the covenant does not cost the employer or the organisation or the charity any money whatsoever. It's purely a commitment that you will treat those leaving the services as well as those and their dependents and spouses with respect, and to give them opportunities that, they treat them fairly.
Richard, thank you so much indeed for joining us this morning. It's been a pleasure talking to you here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio. And is there anything that you'd like to say to the County Durham and Darlington Foundation Trust and those in hospital at the moment not feeling so well? Is there a message that you'd like to leave them this morning?
Well, Dennis, first of all, thank you for your kindness. You said earlier about, only just a GJ. But by heck, you're running the show, you're making the coffee, you've kept us all, myself, relaxed. You're an incredible interviewer. And with your own personal disabilities with your eyesight, Denny, I congratulate you, first of all. Naturally, everybody in hospital, I wish them well and a speedy recovery. And this hospital obviously does quite a lot of specialist treatments, as I know myself. And just to all those listening today, thank you for all the support you give to the Trust and hopefully our armed forces.
And may long this covenant be signed and work together with the County Durham and Darlington Foundation Trust.
Absolutely.
From me, thank you so much indeed for joining us, and may I wish you all the very best for the future.
Thank you.
We're going to leave you with this one time song that he absolutely loves, and it's 6-3-3. What does it mean to you?
Well, if you actually listen to the burst of music when it was written to emphasise the machine guns firing as it goes through. So it's a very evocative piece of music. And that well scripted by an amazing composer, and again, it just brings back the old shackles on the back of the neck, and it invokes a passion and everything else.
Richard, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dennis.
once again, thank you very much indeed to Richard Tucker, MBE, who joined us this morning and over the past hour here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio.